Coming to you from the Sherpa Chalet at the top of beautiful downtown Mount Podcastia, it's a special episode of Too Many Podcasts. I'm Jim the Podcast Sherpa, and today it's a special episode where I get to speak with people from the entertainment industry. So get yourself an aisle seat, pop up some popcorn, and get a cold drink ready, and sit back. Don't crunch too loud, or else you'll miss the interview from the Sherpa Screening Room. Hey there, and welcome to another episode of the Sherpa Screening Room. It's me, Jim, the podcast Sherpa. Hope you're having a great week and that you enjoy today's interview with Oliver Robbins. Oliver started out as a child actor, and he was in such popular movies as Poltergeist and Poltergeist 2, and also was in Airplane 2, along with a bunch of other movies, and also worked with a lot of famous celebrities in the meantime. But as Oliver grew older, he gained more of an interest in working behind the camera. So I got the chance to sit down with him through video in the Sherpa conference room and to hear all about his movie career. And it's really fascinating how a young child actor has come full circle, and he's back on the screen in an upcoming movie as well. But we'll hear about that right after I remind you that this podcast is brought to you by Audible, and you can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/Sherpa. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Let's listen to the conversation that I had with Oliver. Hey there, Rebels. Are you hiding under your sheets right now, maybe peeking through with one eye because you might get a little scared? But you don't have to be scared, especially not of my guest today. He's an actor, a writer, a director, and he really got his start in some of the scariest horror movies of the time, and he was just around 10 years old when he started it, but he's done so much more since then, and we're going to cover a lot of his career today. Oliver Robbins is my guest. How you doing, Oliver?
I'm doing great. I'm under quarantine right now. I'm getting a little bored like everyone else, but I'm happy to be with you, and I can answer all your questions because I have nowhere else to go right now.
Okay. As long as I have a captive audience, that's all that really matters.
So that's it. You have my full undivided attention.
Okay. So you were about 9 or 10 when you first got started. Were your parents in the movie business?
You know, it's funny. My mother was a fashion editor in New York City. I know you're recording out of Manhattan. And she worked for Harper's Bazaar and 17. And my dad actually was on Wall Street. He was a portfolio manager at the time. But, you know, you might think I was born with a silver spoon. However, I grew up during the 1970s. And anyone in New York City knows what the 1970s were like in Manhattan. It wasn't like it was today. My dad was fully unemployed. My mom, you know, barely supported us doing her job. And my parents needed a change. And they're like, we're going to move to sunny Southern California. So we did. And when I got out here, I started watching kids on television. I was thinking to myself, you know, I can do what they can do, you know. And I told my mother that. I said, I want to be an actor. And she told me, said, you know, the day before I wanted to be a police officer or a fireman or a doctor. And so she put it aside. But I kept pursuing it. And eventually she put me in a commercial workshop class. And at the end of the class, my mom thought it would be finished. And then, you know, I'd move on to another hobby. And the teacher, Sheila Manning, said, you know, Oliver's pretty good. He should meet with some agents and we'll send him out on auditions. And that's what happened. And my very first commercial was a fertilizer commercial. And after that, I went out for the open call for Poltergeist and I got it.
Wow. That's a pretty good start, right? To do a Spielberg movie.
I know. And, you know, it's funny. I didn't even know who Steven Spielberg was. My parents were very protective, so I hadn't seen any of his films at that point in my life. You know, the first horror movie, honestly, I ever saw was Poltergeist. So when I read for this movie, I didn't know about Tobe Hooper or Texas Chainsaw or even about Jaws or any of those kind of films. I just knew I was a kid in a family and that I was scared of these various things. I didn't even receive the script till they actually gave me the part.
I think what really works in Poltergeist especially is that it's a very normal family. There's no melodrama. They're reacting to, you know, the spirit that's in the house, and it's not over the top. You know, it's like a real fear. You can see the fear in your eyes and in the actresses that played your sisters as well. Like, everyone was scared, and even Jo Beth Williams and Craig Nelson.
Yes, Craig T. Nelson, yes. Well, you know, think about that. What I love about Poltergeist, and as a grown-up, as a filmmaker, I just admire how daring it was. It was a very slow burn. Like you said, nothing is wrong with this family. We love each other. It's a perfect family. And we have our quirks, and we care about it so much. And we don't get into the movie in the first 10 minutes. We get to know them. We get to know everything about the kids. And slowly but surely, things begin to happen. And even then, it's still really playful. It's not sinister. We don't get the jump scares coming in. And I think the filmmakers today are forced, or they do it to themselves, they feel like they quickly have to get into the story. They have to have the jump scares. When in fact, you know, our audiences are smarter than we really think. And they're patient. And if they get to know characters in the movie they really like, they're going to go with you on the ride. And that's what Poltergeist really does. And I think that's one of the things that really keeps the staying power of the film. And that's why the film, it still works after 40 years. It's the relationship between the family and the situations. And because you care about them so much, everything that they go through, you're rooting for them along their journey.
It's a relatable family with almost a relatable terror.
Yeah, it was such a, you know, it was such an interesting, fresh creative idea written by Steven Spielberg, you know, about who would think there would be bodies, you know, buried under your, you know, a suburban development. And at that time, there had been nothing like that out in the theaters.
Now, you also did the sequel, Poltergeist 2, The Other Side.
Yes.
After having done the first one, and I mean, you were a couple of years older as well, what were your feelings to do, you know, being such a young actor and already doing a sequel?
Well, the thing is, I hated a junior high, and I was looking for any way to get out of it. I was bullied every day in 7th and 8th grade. It was the most horrible experience. And people are like, well, weren't you you're an actor. People probably honored you. You were popular. When in fact, I ate lunch by myself almost every day at school. I dreaded going to class, and I was beat up every day too. And at that time, you know, the principal told me, he says, look, Oliver, you have to really work. You have to learn how to defend yourself. Bullying wasn't what it was like in the early 80s. So I was so excited when they called me and they said, Oliver, we're doing a sequel to Poltergeist. We want you to be in it. And I couldn't jump. I mean, I just was like in love with that whole entire idea. So I was going to get to leave school. I was going to leave the bullies behind. And I was going to get to do what I love most, acting.
Maybe the kids that were around you didn't know how they were supposed to act around you. Like, well, here's a kid who's doing movies and he's on the screen. And they probably figured, well, he's not like us.
No, I think anyone who's a little different, you know, you're going to be treated, you know, as such. And, you know, the kid, they don't know how to really act towards you. And I think maybe it comes out of jealousy or ignorance. Or just the mere fact that kids are kids, and you know, unless you tell them, you give them some kind of moral compass, they're going to do bad things to their peers. And that's exactly what I experienced, unfortunately.
Well, I'm sorry that you had to deal with that, but made you stronger coming out on the other end, though.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's good, because it definitely makes you a stronger person, though, too. And it makes you, and it's something that really helped me in the film industry, too, because one thing, the film business, you really have to fight for what you believe in. You have, as my old manager used to tell me, he says, their job is to say no. So if you believe in something, in a way, you're dealing with bullies in the studio system, and you have to stand up for what you believe in and fight for what you believe in. And that comes down to making the movies you want to make and the kind of movies you want to make, not only that, but how you're going to make them.
I don't want to dwell too much about it, but I'm sure you were saying earlier that it gets brought up a lot and you're not afraid to talk about it, about the curse of Poltergeist with the two actresses that played your sister, Heather O'Rourke and Dominique Dunn, dying at a very young age, and even some of the other actors that were in the movies passing away after the movies were completed. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's so tragic that these things took place, and we lost some very, you know, beautiful people. Heather would have gone on to do a lot of great things. She was an incredibly smart little girl. And Dominique, I know, would have done so much more with her life. And, in terms of the, you know, the curse, there really is no curse at all, you know, in these films. Things happen on every set. And I think it's just a series of tragedies that occurred. And, you know, when you really connect the dots, you can create this urban legend, which, you know, is good in one way, is that it creates longevity for the movie. So, it creates another generation that's going to, you know, see the film, remember the movie. And that's a good thing, because Poltergeist is a great film and people should remember it and the filmmakers that were behind it. If the positive thing that comes out of this urban legend is that people want to watch the film and it's remembered for multiple generations, then that's the good thing that came out of this urban legend.
And you actually had your own little scary situation while making Poltergeist.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. People talk about the clown doll scene. You know, and this was funny, and I believe it happened because my mom said it did. But I guess the clown doll arm was caught around my neck, and Steven jumped in and rescued me, you know, because it was choking around my neck. But, you know, it's funny. I can't even remember it ever happening. But my mom said it was there, and everyone remembers it. So I'm like, I'm going to go with that story.
And your character, really, Robbie Freeling, probably went through so much in that movie, especially with the trees going after him as well, trying to eat him up.
You know, what's interesting about that, when I auditioned for the film was top secret. No one knew what the story was. But for the very first audition, they said, you know, Oliver, what are you afraid of? And I said, well, you know, I'm afraid of this clown, this little Charlie Chaplin clown that sits on my desk. I'm afraid of this tree outside. I was pretty much afraid of everything as a kid growing up, because I always felt I was growing up in this haunted house, in this townhouse on the Upper East Side in New York City. And I swear, in this townhouse, it was built in the 1860s. And my parents didn't tell me this till years later. But believe it or not, I can say I grew up in a whorehouse, because this was an actual whorehouse right after the Civil War on the Upper East Side of New York City. Story is, I heard, you know, people walking up those stairs. So when I was acting in those scenes in Poltergeist and they said, think of the scariest thing that you can possibly think of, Oliver, I thought about that house, that townhouse in Manhattan with ghosts walking up those stairs. And I swear to this day, it wasn't a house suddenly. There was something going on there. And I always remember that from the perspective of a six-year-old.
And they really kind of capitalized on that, like when they made the movie. Same thing, I guess, when the scene with Jo Beth Williams when she's in the pool. Those are actual skeletons.
That, you know, that was my understanding. I asked, I don't know if they're toying with me because I was a kid and they like to play with me a little bit. But I said to the crew, I asked one of the special effects guys, I said, are those like real skeletons? Said, yes, they are. So I had to take their word for it that they actually were real skeletons. So yes, that's the story. And I'm keeping to it. And they were real skeletons, at least according to what they told me.
Now, with all of that kind of filming that you had to endure, you know, like with a clown doll coming after you and a tree trying to eat you and being sucked into the vortex, what exactly is your mindset? You just kind of say, well, it's a movie and they're just making it look good. And did it freak you out after you were done making this movie?
Well, this is the thing about making a film. It's shot over several months. You know, a film production can go on for like 6 months or so, and they shoot the film entirely out of order. And in a movie like this, especially, special effects are laid in afterwards. So when I was acting those scenes, I had no idea how any of the sequences were going to work. I really relied upon Toby to tell me what am I scared of? Like, we all wonder that. Like we'd be standing there on the soundstage against like a blue screen, and we'd ask him, we'd say, Toby, what exactly are we screaming at? I mean, what are we scared of? And he said, you know, we don't know, but just imagine the scariest thing you can possibly think of. And ILM had not created everything yet. So to answer your question, yes, I was totally terrified of the movie after I saw the film. But during production, it was just a game. It was like going to summer camp, and I had the best time on set. And every day was like a new challenge. They say, okay, now you're going to be eaten by this tree. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go with this. And these tree arms are going to come at you, and they're going to grab at you, and you're going to get on the tree and make it look like it's attacking you. I'm like, okay, that makes perfect sense. And everything makes sense to you when you're 10, 11 years old. I just had fun. You know, the making of the film was a blast. Well, after I saw the film, I was like, wow, this is scary. I even, you know, even in the jump scares, I jumped when I was 10 years old when I saw it.
We might need you to kind of explain the reference here. You did a movie called Don't Go to Sleep. Was that like a movie of the week?
It was a very unique film, especially for the time. It was produced by Aaron Spelling, and it starred Valerie Harper and Dennis Lever. And it had Ruth Gordon, who I also got to act with, too. And it was a very dark little film. You wouldn't think you'd see that on television at the time. The storyline was basically about this psychotic sister I had who proceeds to basically kill everyone in the family, including me. And we don't know if it's really a ghost story, if she's haunting us, or indeed she's like really there and she's a true sociopath. And I think, you know, you have to realize today we'd say, okay, we can see that on Netflix. What's so great about that? But that was on, I can believe that was like on ABC in the early 80s on primetime television. So that was an extremely daring film for the time it came out.
And I remember those movies, too. You'd get the voiceover announcer with a really deep voice, and you would probably say the title very ominously, like, "Don't go to sleep."
Yeah, it had that kind of vibe, too. And it's funny, I just watched it like a couple months ago, and I was like, wow, this is pretty scary, actually.
And you also did the reboot of The Twilight Zone, too.
I did a Twilight Zone episode, and I hacked it with one of the finest actors, a gentleman, the kindest man, Ralph Bellamy. And he really, and I was like almost turning 16 years old at the time, and I acted with him for an entire week every day. And he showed me how to act. He showed me how you should approach a scene, how you should conduct yourself on set as a man and as one of the leads. And he showed me, and he had his leather-bound script. And he said, "This is how you break down your script, Oliver." And my father was never starstruck by anyone, but he was starstruck by Ralph Bellamy, and because he played FDR at Springtime at Campobello. And it was just such a great memory. And I remember Ralph Bellamy said, "You know, see this ring I have on? Franklin, you know, it was Franklin Delano Roosevelt's, and Eleanor gave it to me. So you want to put it on, Oliver?" And I said, "Sure." So I put on FDR's ring, and paintings, you could see that ring that Eleanor gave to Ralph Bellamy because he did such a wonderful performance on at Springtime.
After Poltergeist 2, your career actually took a little bit of a change, but I just want to touch on one other movie because it's one of my favorites. Airplane 2, the sequel, and you were Jimmy.
I love doing that. And honestly, that was such a great break for Poltergeist, because I was either covered in molasses or some kind of weird goo, or in, you know, screaming every day. And Airplane 2, I just had a laugh and joke, and everything was just over the top. You know, so it was really all the cast members, everything I ever worked on, they were just so great to me. Julie Haggerty and Robert Hayes were fantastic. And it was such a fun set. The director did such a good job with me, too. It made me so relaxed, and I got to have pies in my face. And I just had such a wonderful experience doing that movie.
And just as a reminder to everybody, Oliver's in that classic scene where Peter Graves says to him, "Oh, I see that Scraps is a boy dog."
And people don't realize how funny Peter Graves is. He was known to be a serious actor, but most of those lines were ad-libs, and he'd come up with them right off the cuff. Like, "You like it when dogs play leapfrog, but don't quite make it," you know, things like that. So, and he came up with all those kind of things, like one after another, you know. So he was fantastic at ad-libs, too.
I think that was the real kick of that movie, that you had so many actors who were known for playing these dramatic, serious roles, and here they were deadpanning perfect comedy.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it was a fantastic break for them to be able to do that, too. And, you know, and you can feel the jokes were really working on the set so well, because they'd call cut, and people were laughing. So if the crew were laughing after you call cut, then, you know, the jokes are really going to work for the audience as well.
After you did Poltergeist 2, you got a present from Mr. Spielberg, I understand.
Yes, you know, I was on set, and then really, I just fell in love with the whole filmmaking process. And he said, you know, "Steven's like, you know, I have a surprise for you." And he said, "Tomorrow I'm going to bring something to set." And I said, "Okay." So he brought the steel case, and what was in it was a Beaulieu 5008S camera. And what that is, that was a Super 8 camera. And a lot of people don't realize you couldn't shoot video then. The only thing, if you wanted to make a movie, you had to shoot in film, even with Super 8. So he took me under his wing, and he started showing me, this is how you shoot. This is how you tell your story. And he had this black background on. He punched cardboard holes in it. He said, "Shoot a light behind it. You hang a spaceship here, and this is how you do your earliest first special effects." And that's where I started. I started doing claymation movies, and I did my epic 8-minute claymation film called Day Pac-Man Ate the Earth. Well, basically, the storyline was about Miss Pac-Man saves Pac-Man from eating the earth because love can save us all. And it was my first big drama, you know, made in claymation. And I went on and made a couple other films that won various film festivals as a kid. And I told Steven, I said, "I want to be a filmmaker. I want to do this for my life. I love it so much." And he said, if you want to do that, you're really going to have to learn the rules. And he said, and I told him, "What's that?" And he says, "Well, all the rules of cinema and storytelling." And I said, "How do I do that?" And he said, "Go to USC Film School." So I applied to USC Film School, like he said, and he even wrote me a letter of recommendation. And lo and behold, I thought, you know, this is a sure thing. I have Mr. Spielberg writing me a letter of recommendation. I have to get into USC Film School. They turned me down. They rejected me. But one thing I learned, like I said before, you really have to fight what you believe in. And I knew I had to go to USC. That was my destiny. So I met with the dean of the film school, and I showed him my movie, and he overrode the admission committee. And the deal was, I had to maintain a 3.0 average. I was almost like, I was like putting on something called special probation status, which it sounds like something from Animal House. And I had to maintain this GPA. I know, it's ridiculous. But, you know, it's kind of a compromise. And I was like, okay, I can maintain a 3.0 as long as I get to make my movies at USC Film School. And I did. And I had a great time. And I worked with so many people I've met there and other projects. And it was the best experience of my life. And they really taught me everything I know really about cinema that I didn't learn on set.
And if you look at the people that you have worked with, just amazing actors and actresses, Valerie Harper, Dennis Weaver, Craig T. Nelson, Jo Beth Williams, Rob Reiner played your dad in Million Dollar Infield. How were you able to transition out of being a child actor and, you know, wanting to be on the other side of the camera?
I loved acting so much. But the thing is, I wanted to tell stories and I wanted to be in control of that. And I had so many stories to tell. I was always creative as a kid and I always wrote so many stories. And it was, you know, it seemed like the eventual transition to just making visual storytelling. And the only way you can do that, you can't really do that as an actor because you're not the director or the writer. And nor you have to transition me to the filmmaker. And, you know, I was really blessed because I was an actor. A lot of the public doesn't really understand sometimes that being an actor, you're the most sensitive person on the earth. You're very shy. And I was extremely shy. You would say, how could you possibly be shy? You're an actor. You're on screen. Like many actors, I was really introspective. And I really kept to myself. And actors are so sensitive. And as a director, you have to gain their trust because you're asking them to do things that later on you see on screen and you accept and you say that works perfectly. But at the time on set, you're really putting yourself out there. You're taking risks. And as the director, you have to gain that trust and help the actor through whatever they're experiencing and get to that place, whatever story you're telling, that it's real and it's honest for the audience.
And also, in the meantime, you had gotten into doing some writing as well.
Yeah, I've written a lot of different odds and ends over the years. And one thing I was really proud of, it's a little movie I wrote for the Hallmark Channel called You've Got a Friend. And it was about this little boy who loses his parents in the wake of a terrible car accident. And he moves in with his relatives. Really don't really want him, but he has one big dream. He wants to be a soapbox racer. And he dreamed about it ever since he could imagine. And, you know, he has no one to support his dream. But it turns out in this little town, this person who just came back from Vietnam lost all his friends. His family is gone. And he's considered the town freak, played by John Schneider, befriends a little boy. And he's actually a champion soapbox racer. And he helps a little boy come out of his shell and learn what it is to be a champion. And, you know, John Schneider's character needs a little boy just as much as the boy needs him. So they help each other. And you know, and I was really influenced by, like, Cinema Paradiso. That was kind of my major influence for that movie. And I love that film because it's moved so many people. And it was actually the highest rated June premiere for Hallmark Channel. So, yeah, I love writing stories like that. However, the last thing I've done is a horror piece. So I can talk more about that later in our chat.
Right. Actually, I was going to bring it right up because then you kind of came full circle with a movie that you wrote and you directed and you acted in it as well, Celebrity Crush.
But, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking I'd never act again. And I really had no interest in ever going in front of the camera. And my friends were like, I came with this idea about this kid who's in this movie called Chain Face Clown that came out. It's a fictional movie, and it was a kind of a pulp cult movie from 1985. The kid grows up to become a man, and, you know, he's kind of down on his luck, and he meets this super fan at this horror convention for the re-release of the Chain Face Clown movie. And she seduces him, and she takes him back to her place. And, you know, basically he thinks he's going to have this fling. It turns out she has other plans and she traps him. And basically she's going to live out every fantasy she has about this actor. And it's kind of a black comedy mixed with horror. So sometimes you don't know if you're supposed to laugh or you're supposed to scream. And I wrote this piece and I was thinking, you know, I wanted to hire a couple other actors to be in it. Like, no, my friends from film school are like, Oliver, you've got to act in this thing. It's almost autobiographical to some degree. And I'm like, but I haven't acted in almost 40 years. And they're like, just do it. It's going to come back, like riding a bicycle. And lo and behold, it did. And I got to tell you, the first day on set, I was terrified. And I hadn't done it in so many years. Not only had I not done it, I hadn't done a lot of things that you have to do as a grown-up actor, like your first kiss. So the young actress who plays my, you know, femme fatale, Alicia Schneider, I asked her, I said, you know, Alyssa, you know, I know I wrote this script, but I have to kiss you in the scene. How do we how do we do this? And he said, oh, it's okay, Oliver. This is how we do it. It's purely technical. And I had my very first kiss on screen at this age. And you kind of take for granted, because I was directing actors as a young man, and I asked them to do certain things, and I had no idea what I was really putting them through. But I'm really glad I experienced it. So, yeah, this film comes out May 26th everywhere. It's coming out by Random Media. And you can check my Facebook for updates on it. And you can go to celebcrushmovie.com. And you can Google the trailer, Celebrity Crush, on YouTube. And you can check out the trailer and see if you want to see it. And I think it turned out pretty great. I really like what we did with it. And I had a lot of fun making this movie.
You're, I think, one of the first people that I've met that just doesn't seem to have much luck around clowns.
I know. I was like, I kind of made that kind of an homage Poltergeist. So I was like, how can I make this a little different, but at the same time kind of has elements of my own past. It has a lot of, like, as I say, Easter eggs in the movie. If you watch the movie, you go, oh my God, that's like that movie. And it has those derivations, I would say, from the films I've acted in.
Can we talk about your other movie that's supposed to be coming out in 2021? The Rideshare Killer?
Oh my God, that was a fantastic experience too. Ashley Myers wrote and directed it, and it was interesting. I actually worked with Ashley years ago. I directed a film for him that he wrote called Man Overboard. It was this little comedy, and we had such a good time working on it together. And he was like, and he heard I acted in this other film, and he said, you know, Oliver, do you want to act in this movie that I'm going to be doing? And I said, sure, why not? I had a blast in other film, and I don't have to direct it. Just tell me what to do. And believe me, that's a big break. It's very hard when you're directing yourself and acting in every scene, too. And we had a blast, and he was great at directing me, too. He made me so comfortable on set. Eric Roberts is in it, and the star of it is Tuesday Night, and Tuesday's from Nightmare on Elm Street, and she is so great. And I just had so much fun. And after doing that, I was like, you know, this acting is fun as a grown-up, and I really enjoyed it so much. I want to do it again. So if any filmmakers are out there and they need an actor like me, after you see Celebrity Crush, give me a shout.
So now I'm thinking, so you made clowns scary. Does this mean you're going to make Uber and Lyft scary now?
You know, I like to go back and forth between the kind of films I make. You know, I love family movies, but it is kind of fun to, you know, scare people with cinema, though, too. And you know what? In this time, in this day and age, and everything that's going on right now, it's good to take people out of the real world and bring them in. And if they're being scared, it should be something, as they say, on the celluloid canvas. And just sit at your home, and you can watch something. You don't have to think about anything else going on other than the fear and the fright you're feeling on screen.
Now, out of all the work that you've done, is there any particular one that stands out for you the most?
You know, there really isn't. They're all so different. And, you know, I've gained so much from each one, and I've learned a great deal. I feel like I know everything. I'm like, I know everything after every film. But I learned something new, and each movie I make really presents its own challenges. And, you know, I thought if I have more money, it'll be easier, but it really never is. And I love that challenge. I love going to set and have problem solving with a team, because you're working with so many fun, creative people, and everyone's on their mission. And then the gift you finally get is you finish this movie after all these months, and then it goes on TV, and people share that experience. It's like a social experiment, and you get to see what you put out there and how it's going to impact everyone and see how it makes them feel. And for me, that filmmaking it's one of the more powerful things, because you can tap into universal emotions that, you know, cross borders and cultures and everything else, because we're all afraid of certain things. And I really learned that when I toured around with Poltergeist, and I learned, you know, what made people afraid.
Is there any type of movie that you haven't done yet that you would like to do, whether it's either acting or writing or directing?
I'd like to have a bigger budget. You know, I've never honestly had a studio level budget to really do what I want to do. And with that, you have more time and you can work with certain cast members. Because unfortunately, you know, filmmaking is one of the most expensive art forms on this earth. You know, any other art form, a writer can sit down and write a book, or a painter can get out his canvas. But for the canvas for a filmmaker, is very expensive, and it could sometimes take years to raise the money to do that. So I have my various scripts I would love to make, and I just need financing for it. And on the one hand, with what's going on with technology, everyone can go out and make a movie. But at the same time, because everyone can make a film with the technology and it's so readily available, there's so much of it out there. So it's become more challenging to get your product seen by people. throughout the world because you have, there's so much to choose from.
This is Oliver Robbins once again, and I'd like to say thank you very much for coming down to the Sherpa Screening Room. And if you want, provide me with the links and I'll put them in the show notes so everybody can check it out.
Okay, I will definitely give you all that and everyone can go to see Celebrity Cry.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks so much. It was a pleasure. Have a good night.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Sherpa Screening Room. And a special thanks to Mr. Oliver Robbins for swinging by for a nice little chat. Don't keep both your eyes closed. Keep one eye open for the opening of his new movie, Celebrity Crush. You can hear this show on your favorite podcast app, or you can even go to my website, sherpalution.com. Follow me on social media at sherpalution on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. If you get the chance, please put in a nice review for me on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, or Stitcher. Let people know about the Sherpalution. I guess it's time to go, so Mr. Bruce, could you please show everyone the door and don't go close to the TV set? I don't have cable, that's all. Okay, see you guys next time. Bye, Rebels. Viva la Sherpalution.
Thanks for listening to Too Many Podcasts. Please disperse. You can go home now. I said you can go home now. Viva la Sherpalition. Viva la Sherpalition. Oh. Yeah, I'll come back now, you hear?